BadQuaker.com podcast. Today is May 15th. Let's see, Tuesday? It is Tuesday. Today's Tuesday, May 15th, 2012. My name is Ben Stone, and this is podcast number 145. With me today is Baggy the cat. Normally, Baggy is somewhere around in the house. Oftentimes here in the office, you know, sitting around, sleeping, or just staring at me. Today she's actually trying to sit on my keyboard, and she's attempting to block my access to my mouse. So in a moment here, she'll probably start batting at the microphone. It's not that she's hungry or anything like that. It's just that sometimes she doesn't get enough attention, and if I'm paying attention to something else, obviously that means I'm not paying attention to her. And if she's awake, well, you know, anyway. Okay, so I'll try to plow through this and see if I can work my way around Baggy to accomplish this. Nikki, the dog, is being a good little girl. She is laying over there in a different chair, and in a chair on the other side of the room, that is, and she's occasionally looking up at me, but otherwise she's being a good little girl, and as she almost always is. I wanted to mention the Anarchy Gumbo podcast that Michael W. Dean has over there at Kitty Feet. I believe it's kittyfeet.org. Let me just pause the recording while I look that up so I know what I'm talking about. Okay, so that's kittyfeet.com, not .org. Anyway, Michael W. Dean over at, he's works with Nima Vedati over at the Freedom Fiends podcast. He does an occasional podcast called the Anarchy Gumbo podcast, and it is definitely not family friendly. It's not intended to be. It's more for a mature audience, but it's really good. He has a variety of different guests from different people from the Liberty Movement, and they talk about a variety of topics. Well, his most recent one has Mark Edge from Free Talk Live. My mouth is messing up again. Hopefully I can get through this podcast and still be able to speak. Anyway, so Michael W. Dean had Mark Edge on the latest Anarchy Gumbo podcast. And I like listening to Mark. I like listening to him at Free Talk Live, but giving him mic time on the Anarchy Gumbo podcast. See, I don't know if I'm going to be able to talk through this podcast or not. Giving him the freedom to just speak back and forth on, that Michael W. Dean gave him on the Anarchy Gumbo podcast really allows a little bit more freedom than what he has on Free Talk Live, because in Free Talk Live, of course, he has live call-ins and they're fielding whatever topics it's a caller. If you're unfamiliar with Free Talk Live, it's a caller-driven show. So whatever the callers are calling in, talking about, that's what they talk about. But Michael W. Dean was able to talk to him on specific topics and really work things out and let him express himself, and it was really good. I really enjoyed the podcast. I don't get to listen to as many podcasts as I'd like to. My schedule is so full, and I don't get to really listen to the podcast that I used to, even like a year ago or more. But I enjoy that Anarchy Gumbo podcast. Anyway, one thing that Mark was saying. Now, Mark is not Mark is a pacifist, and or at least mostly. I'm not sure exactly how he classifies himself, but he's not a violent person, and he doesn't put a lot of his dependence on firearms. And he made a really good point. He was talking about gun ownership because Michael W. Dean always likes to ask his guests about that topic. And Mark Edge made the point that, you know, Iraq, even under Saddam Hussein, the people, the average citizen had the legal capability to carry a fully automatic AK-47. The gun laws under Saddam Hussein, under tyranny, what we consider here in America as the horrible dictator Saddam Hussein with all his tyranny, the average person had more gun, I hate to use this phrase because it's so inaccurate, but they had more gun rights than we do here in America. Of course, you know, if you listen to me very often, you'll know that I don't believe there's such a thing as gun rights. We have property rights, but we don't have gun rights any more than we have bubblegum rights or we have, you know, any other object rights. Rights are not object-specific. Rights are specific to individuals, and individuals have a right to own property, and it doesn't matter what that property is, and it doesn't matter whether you or the government or anybody else likes that property or not. If a person owns property, then it's theirs, and no one else has the right to tell them what they can or can't do with it, as long as they don't aggress on anyone else. And so I don't believe in gun rights. I believe in property rights, and therefore I believe that anybody who can responsibly you know, behave themselves and not aggress on others can own any kind of weaponry that that they themselves can either work for and own or possess in whatever legitimate way. Anyway, huge disclaimer. But back to Mark's point, you know, there are so many people in America that believe this lie, and that's really what it is. It's a lie. There's so many people in America that believe this lie that America will never have tyranny because we got our Second Amendment. Well, wake up, all right? The Second Amendment is just scribblings on a piece of paper, and that piece of paper, all those so-called rights that you think you have scribbled on that piece of paper have been walked on constantly. You don't have any rights given to you by a piece of paper. And the government could care less about that Second Amendment. They walk on it regularly. I've attacked the Second Amendment nonsense before, but let me just do this one more time. What does it say in that Second Amendment? The right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Infringed. Now, if someone infringes upon my, and again, the difference between property and real estate, a lot of people on the right wing especially, but leftists also, they like to confuse these terms, property with real estate. Real estate can be property, but again, bubblegum is property too. So anyway, so let's say I have a piece of land, real estate, and I have a fence around that land. And you walk up and infringe upon my property. That means you put your toe on it. You touch the edge of it. That doesn't mean you parked a dump truck in the middle of it. All right, so now let's take this to your supposed gun rights. If I have the right to keep and bear arms, first off, arms are not guns. Arms are any particular mechanical or blade-type method of defending yourself, whether that be a bow and arrow or a rock, or a machine gun, or a bazooka, or a tank. There's no separation here of what is defensive arms. But the statement in the Second Amendment is, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Infringed. Now that means the edge of it can't be touched. You can't touch the edge of that right. You can't. That's the law. That's the law in the United States of America. And yet, what would happen right here in Ohio, where I live, if I legally strap a pistol on my hip and walk downtown in public? I can expect to have the police called on me. I can expect to have cops surround me in an aggressive fashion, drawing their weapons on me. And if I make the slightest indication that I'm going to bear those arms, because keep in mind, a holstered weapon, even legally, is not bearing arms. Bearing arms means to draw whatever the weapon is and brandish it. That's bearing an arm. And yet, if I'm walking downtown in the small Ohio town that I live in with a pistol openly strapped on my hip, which is legal, I am almost certain to be swarmed with cops. And if I attempt to bear those arms, I will be shot and killed. That's America. Your Second Amendment doesn't mean squat. Wake up, people. Now that's the facts. Throw your myth away. Open your eyes and see the world you live in. And stop living in this silly right-wing fantasy. The Second Amendment means nothing to the people who control this country. It only means something to the people who believe the myth. Okay, now, let's get back to what Mark was saying. Mark pointed out that under Saddam Hussein, the dictator, the tyrant, Saddam Hussein, in Iraq, you could own fully automatic weaponry, an AK-47, fully automatic. You could own it. You can own it there now, in Iraq right now today. And yet, that doesn't keep tyranny. It didn't keep tyranny away. In a variety of countries, people, you know, individuals have had the legal ability to own, they have had freer laws to own weaponry than they have in the United States. And it didn't keep them from having tyranny, because tyranny, when we have a tyrannical government, and to a certain extent all government is tyrannical, but as that government grows and becomes more and more tyrannical, it does so with the consent of the governed. How do you know it does so with the consent of the government? Because all government exists by the consent of the government. It's there because we tolerate it. If we didn't tolerate it, we'd throw it off. This has happened over and over through history. This is always the case. Any time in history, when the people get sick of the tyrant that's over them, they throw it off. So just having your weapons and having your guns and having your precious little writing on a silly little piece of paper that tells you you have a right to keep and bear arms, none of that stuff keeps you from tyranny. What brings tyranny onto you is the complacency of all your neighbors around you to allow tyranny to come upon you. And if you think you owning arms are going to stop tyranny, you know, I make fun of these right-wing people all the time because they always say this phrase, well, there's a line in the sand. You cross that line in the sand. That line only exists in your imagination. There is no line in the sand. Talk to David Koresh about a line in the sand. Talk to Randy Weaver about a line in the sand. You want to resist the federal government? They will kill you. It doesn't matter how well-armed you think you are. I don't have his name in front of me, but think of that Marine down in Arizona who was attempting to defend his family from what he thought was a home invader as they busted through the door, and it turns out they were a SWAT team making a raid on the wrong address. And that Marine was laying in his floor with his rifle pointed at the door. And he used self-control and did not fire because he recognized that it was a SWAT team. So he realized that, you know, they were, quote, the good guys. Yeah, well, they didn't give him the same courtesy. They riddled him with bullets and then left him laying there bleeding and wouldn't let the emergency personnel help him until he bled to death. That's what the government will do to you if you resist the government on any level. They don't care about some stupid writings on some old document. They don't care about it. They break their own rules all the time. They break their laws constantly. The government doesn't care about those things. You miss the point of what the government does. I talked about this, something I learned from Robert Higgs, is that when we look at government and we see all the inefficiencies of government and we see how bad it manages things and how bad it accomplishes things, and we think, you know, oh man, you know, the government is horrible at what it does. No, you're wrong. The government is very good at what it does. It's just that it doesn't do what you think it does. The government is not here to serve you. The government is not here to protect you. The government is not here to provide you with internet connection or with roads or with electricity or with... It's not here to protect you from some foreign nation. None of those things is what the government is here to do. The government is here to dominate, to own, and to control you and to manipulate you and to keep you working for it. That's what the purpose of the government is, to keep you working and shoveling your labor, the fruits of your labor, back to the government so that it can grow and it can dominate more people and it can grow bigger and bigger until it eventually gets to the size that it's outgrown its the feeding mechanism that it grows on. it outgrows the host. And that's the purpose of government. The purpose of government is not to serve you. Okay, so I just wanted to touch that Mark brought that point up, that it's not, owning guns will not keep tyranny away. All these people in America who believe that they own guns and therefore tyranny will never come to the shores of America because we own our guns. Oh, man. You believe exactly what you've been taught to believe. When you buy that kind of stuff, you believe exactly what the mainstream media and what the schools have taught you. You buy into it entirely. And when you bring up the examples that I said a minute ago, David Koresh, Randy Weaver, when you bring up these examples, people are like, well, they was nuts. They is different than us. Well, no. Again, you're just believing mainstream media lies. Randy Weaver did everything he could do to get out and get away from the government and get away from all the things that were a threat to him, and to try to live his life as separate as he possibly could and as peaceful as he possibly could on his own without the interference of the government. And the government hunted him down, shot his children, shot his wife right in front of his eyes. That's what they do. They can't tolerate people not being a part of their system and not supporting them. And the same way with David Koresh. They did everything they could do to be as peaceful as possible. And the government couldn't handle that. They're not in control. The government is not in control. So they'll make an example out of them. Film the whole thing and make an example out of them. That was the purpose of the raid out there at Waco. And this has all been brought. It's not crazy conspiracy stuff. This has all been shown in everything from congressional testimony to documentation. It's all out there. All you have to do is open your eyes. The mainstream media has completely convinced a lot of right-wing people that David Koresh and Randy Weaver were nuts and got the killing they deserved. No, they didn't. They were doing everything they could do to avoid having that kind of contact with the government, and the government sought them out and brought it to them anyway. And that's what the government does. That's exactly what the government does. And let me just point out here, because this is a good time to bring this up, martyrs almost never work. Don't believe the mainstream media lies. If you're a liberty activist and you think, well, you know, I'm going to do this, and what's the worst that's going to happen is that they'll make an example out of me, and I'll be a martyr, and it'll, in the long run, it'll do good for the movement. Well, the fact is, martyrdom almost never works. Now, you know, the classic examples are going to be brought up. Somebody's going to say, well, what about Jesus? What about Martin Luther King? What about Gandhi? What about, you know, well, let's just examine this. I'm going to try not to step on any denominational toes here. But if you really take off all the nonsense that Christendom, all the nonsense that all the different denominations have placed upon Christianity, and you realize really and truly who Jesus was, the things that he said, and the way he lived his life. Now, you take any denomination, you look at any of them, starting all the way back in the early church in 300-400 AD, 500 AD, 1000 AD, 1500 AD, 1800, 1900, 2012. You look at all the different denominations and do so really with a skeptical eye, and take a look at what denominational Christianity has been since just within a couple generations after Jesus was crucified. It's nothing like what Jesus lived and taught. Did he ever in his lifetime, did he ever sit down and say, you know, what you really need to do is you need to have a really big building. You need to have a really big building. And you need to have like a big spire on that building, a big steeple on that building with giant crosses everywhere. That's what you need. Did Jesus ever say that? Where in the Bible does it tell you to build massive churches in honor of Jesus? To have rows of statues and crosses and spires and bells and all those things that come with Christianity? Where's that at in the Bible? Where's that at? Now, I'm not saying that Jesus' martyrdom was a loss or a waste or anything else. It was part of the process. It had to take place. Theologically speaking, it was, you know, part of the process. But what I'm saying is, the things that Jesus taught and the way Jesus lived his life, when he became a martyr, that direction of how he was taking the movement of let's go meet out on this hill and let's talk. But Jesus, we don't have enough food. Well, what do we have? We have a couple baskets of bread and fish. It'll be enough. Just start spreading it around. All of a sudden, everybody's eating. Is that Christianity today? I don't think so. I don't think so. Did Jesus have a collection basket where he was like, no, what, we don't have enough, we only have a few baskets of food? Well, what you need to do is take up a collection. Make sure every one of these people puts some money into that, and then we'll acknowledge some of the bigger donors by putting their name on a pew. Did Jesus do any of those things? I know. Hey, Jesus, how about this? We're going to build a huge building, and the biggest donors, you know, we can like name bricks after them, and we'll have like bricks in the floor, and we'll have bricks in the wall with their name on it, that they're a donor. How about that? Yeah, that sounds like something Jesus did, right? Right? So Jesus' martyrdom, although necessary theologically speaking, altered and twisted his teaching and took it in a totally different direction than he had taught himself. And what about Martin Luther King? You think about Martin Luther King and the direction that he was taking the civil rights movement in the 60s. And then he was murdered. And now, can you honestly tell me that people like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson have taken the civil rights movement in the same direction that Martin Luther King was going with it? I mean, can you seriously say that with a straight face? And you think of any other martyr through history, and there's been a lot. You think of any other martyr, Gandhi, for instance. Gandhi made the ultimate sacrifice for his movement. And in doing so, he gathered a lot of attention, and a lot of things got done. But is India today what you think really Gandhi would have planned it out to be? With nuclear weapons and on the verge of nuclear war with two of its neighbors, is that something Gandhi would have designed, would have approved of? Is that why he wanted to be free of Britain, so that they could have weapons that could destroy their neighbors? Is that sound like something Gandhi would have planned out? Of course not, because once he was dead, his movement shifted and went in a totally different direction. And that's the problem with martyrdom. You're not going to get this from schools or the mainstream media. All the things that we're taught is that, oh, these great martyrs, when they were martyred, it really made their movement grow and expand. No, it didn't. It hijacked it. It decapitated it. That's what it does. And so being a martyr to a movement does not help. Fighting the government and then dying because of it is not going to save you. It's not going to help the movement. It's not going to do anything else. Getting thrown in jail for years and years only means you're in jail. You're not doing anything to help the movement. Well, I hadn't actually intended in going in that direction. But I was just going to make fun of the Second Amendment worshipers. I was going to mock the Second Amendment followers and make fun of them. But kind of went off in the wrong direction there. It is interesting, though, if you think about what the mainstream media pushes on us and what schools push on us and how almost entirely wrong they are on everything. And it's also, you know, there's so much that we, over years, that we absorb from mainstream media and from schools and so forth. And even those of us in the liberty movement, we think in our minds, you know, well, I've rejected the mainstream media. I've rejected all that nonsense they taught me in school. And yet, we really haven't. I catch myself thinking things pretty regularly and then realizing, oh, man, that's not right. That's the nonsense I was taught by the mainstream media. And it's not just specific things, it's a way of analyzing events and things that are happening, things that are even happening in your own life, the way that we analyze them, because the mainstream media is so prevalent in every direction that we look, and because, you know, state schools and even most private schools, they're based so much on the same type of learning, the same learning methods that are so backwards to actually being able to learn anything, that it teaches us not to be able to learn anything. It teaches us to memorize things and not really be able to analyze the information that's coming to us in a way. I was thinking about, and I did want to mention this. There, so many people in the liberty movement, when you're having a discussion with them and you see that they're parroting something that's been told to them by public schools, or they're parroting what they think to be a historical fact, which is actually just a fallacy that's been taught to them in public schools, or they're parroting, something that the mainstream media is saying, and you point out, that's what you're saying there. That's straight from the mainstream media. That's right out of the playbook. You're not really thinking about this. And so many people in the liberty movement will get mad because they're like, no, they think that they are somehow immune to all the brainwashing that they've been exposed to all their life. And the fact is, none of us are immune to that. We swim in it constantly. It's everywhere around us. And because of that, it's just impossible not to pick up some of these flaws from the mainstream media and from schools and so forth. And so, I catch myself regularly having to flush those things out of my brain and say, no, you're not thinking right. You're not analyzing that right. An example recently was this thing that I sort of attacked the Ron Paul people over, with Ron Paul attempting to push through legislation that would, what was the word he used? Oh, I remember, abolish the Federal Reserve. So Ron Paul's pushing through this legislation. Well, he's not pushing it through. He was pushing it, but it wasn't going to go through. It was a stunt. That's all it really was. But so Ron Paul is pushing this legislation to abolish the Federal Reserve, and of course the Federal Reserve is a privately held corporation. So what you have is you have a congressman pushing legislation to abolish a privately held organization. The purpose of the act, of the congressional act, would not be to defund the Federal Reserve. It would not be to revoke the charter. It would not be to, I shouldn't say revoke the charter. I should say revoke the 1913 Federal Reserve Act. It's not doing that. It would actually abolish the Federal Reserve. So we're talking about having government believing that an act of government upon a privately held corporation can fix the problem that government created when they married this private corporation. So you're trusting government to fix a problem that government created. And that sounds good to a libertarian. So, have you thought about that? Have you thought about the possibility of, is government capable of passing a law? An act of Congress is a law. Once the president signs it and all that kind of thing, once it goes through both houses and it becomes a law. Okay, so can an act of Congress that becomes a law of the government, can that be good? Can the net result of that be good? Well, if you believe that an act of government can produce good, then you're a minarchist, and you should embrace that and be happy with it and admit it. But that's the opposite of the zero aggression principle, and that's the opposite of what Bastiat taught about acts of government. There's that which is seen, and there's that which is not seen. And the problem with any act of government is, It doesn't matter what your motivation is. It doesn't matter how pure your motivation is. It doesn't matter how badly you want things to go good and how carefully you construct your law to inflict this law upon society to do good. Government can't do good because it's based on aggression. So if you really believe that government is based on aggression and an act of government is by its very nature aggression, then how can an act of aggression be good? So I kind of got off topic there. Let me break for a commercial because it's that time, and hang around for a couple minutes. I'll be right back, and I'll get back to topic, and I'll get off the Ron Paul bashing thing and get back to my topic at hand. Thanks a lot, folks. Be right back. How would you like to support BadQuaker.com and get something nice for yourself at the same time? I want to tell you about Survival Gear Bags. It's run by my friend Kelly, who believes in and adheres to the non-aggression principle. Kelly's customers know him for his great customer service and his personal touch, because Kelly handles all customer service himself. The main focus of Survival Gear Bags is to allow you to build your own custom emergency kits with quality gear. Now, I know this because I bought my bug out bag from Survival Gear Bags over 2 years ago, and I've gone all over the country with it by my side. And you can rest assured that the prices will always be the best they can be at Survival Gear Bags. And if you use the link from BadQuaker.com, they'll probably throw in something for free for you with your order. Now, how do you do this? Well, it's simple. You go to BadQuaker.com. On the right side of the page, click on the picture of the backpack. Then look around at Survival Gear Bags and find the stuff you want. You'll help BadQuaker.com, and you'll support a merchant that's one of us. Now, I want to tell you about another way you can support BadQuaker.com and get something really cool at the same time. Shire Silver. Shire Silver is the proud seller of silver and gold trade cards. Shire Silver believes that silver and gold trade cards will show the world a better way to save, spend, and share precious metals. So what are silver and gold trade cards? There are specific weights of gold and silver laminated inside credit card-sized tradable cards. They're a handy and affordable way to trade precious metals. These cards received nationwide recognition when they were widely used as barter at the New Hampshire Porcupine Festival. You want a beer and a hot dog? Hand them a Shire Silver 5 card and get a Shire Silver 1 spot back as change. So again, what do? Well, you go to BadQuaker.com. On the right side, just below the backpack, you'll see the Shire Silver trade cards. Click on those cards and then check out Shire Silver's site. Be sure and watch Ron's video that's right there on the main page. And then swap some of those ridiculous Federal Reserve notes for something of real value. Something you can keep, trade, or give as the coolest gift ever. But be sure and use the link from BadQuaker.com. Thanks, folks. Okay, thanks for sticking with me through the commercial. Now, a moment ago, before the commercial, I was bashing Ron Paul. But what I'm really trying to get you to see is that this brainwashing by the mainstream media and by schools puts a person into a position where, you know, they see something like this Abolish the Federal Reserve Act, and they think, that's good, because we want to get rid of the Federal Reserve is bad. The Federal Reserve is robbing us. The Federal Reserve is, you know, doing all these horrible things, and all that's true. So what should we do about it? We should ask government to get involved, and we should trust government to fix the problem for us. You see, that's backward thinking. You're asking the government to fix a problem that government has created. That's never worked. And it's not just that it never has worked, it can't work. Two wrongs can't make a right. You can't fix government by using government to fix government. There's just layers of silliness involved here. And yet so many people, especially the really rabid Ron Paul supporters, they look at this and they think, well, that's good. That's what we want. We want to kill the Federal Reserve. We want Ron Paul. Stop for a minute and really think these things through. Do you really believe that government is the answer? If you believe that government is the answer, I mean, seriously, you're listening to the wrong podcast. You need to go to listen to Rush Limbaugh or whatever. You know, if you really think government can solve your problems, then I'm not sure I can help you. So, but these mainstream media lies, they get into our heads and we don't even realize they're in there. We don't even realize we're thinking the way mainstream media has taught us to think, the way the schools have taught us to think. I remember back one of the early things that stuck in my head when I realized how backwards school thinking was, how backwards how opposite of learning that's I don't even know how to say it correctly, that schools bring upon people. Back in the early 80s, I took a job in a big chemical plant. And I was fairly young at the time, and I went in to the job, and I tried to learn it as quickly as possible. And I had been in the workforce, I've talked about this before, I'd been in the workforce since I was 13. I started working with my dad's construction company when I was 13, and it was not like, oh, he's the boss's son, so he gets everything easy. It was just the opposite. My dad felt that if he allowed me on the work site working, that I was taking a job away from a man. So if I couldn't work like the men were working, then I wouldn't stay around. He would get rid of me and give a man that job so that that man could support his family or whatever. That's the way my dad thought. So I had to not only prove myself and work to the same level that the men were working, but I had to go beyond that. And so I had a real high work ethics right from the beginning. And so at 13, I'm keeping up with the men and actually passing them and embarrassing them. So, you know, I learned that work ethic really early. And so by the time I was up in my 20s and I was working for this chemical factory, I went in and with enthusiasm to not just do the job, but to learn everything I could learn about the job so that I could do the job better than anybody else around me was doing it. And that was always the way that I approached doing a job. I didn't want to just, do the minimum and get it done and get my paycheck. I always felt like if I'm going to do this, I want to know as much about it as possible, and I want to do the job better than anybody else is doing it. Now, I didn't always accomplish that because I don't have the physical capabilities of some people, and I don't have the intellectual capabilities of some people, so I'm never going to be the absolute best at anything, probably. But if I don't shoot for the target, then I'm definitely not going to hit it. If you set up a target at 100 yards or something, and you bring your rifle out and you think, okay, I'm going to shoot this target, and then you don't aim at the target, what odds are there that you're actually going to hit that target? If you don't aim for the thing, your ultimate goal, then you're definitely not going to hit it. And if you don't constantly adjust your aim, evaluate how you're shooting, where you're hitting, and adjust that aim, you're definitely not going to hit your target. This is the problem with a lot of minarchists, I believe. They grasp the idea that we need as little government as possible, and they grasp the idea that government, by its very nature, is evil. Somehow they're convinced that we still need a little bit of government, but they don't shoot at their target. They end up, their target being little or no government, they end up accepting the type of government that's handed to them. They just want to tweak it a little bit so that it does what they want, what they feel is important. And they're not really realizing what their target is and moving towards it. This is the problem with the conservatives. All conservatives talk smaller government. And then they get in power and they don't make a smaller government. They make a bigger government. They just want government to do the things they want it to do because they don't really have a target. They don't really understand what they want really in the long run. They have this imagination of a day gone by when the government used to be what they fantasized that it used to be. Well, of course, that version of history never existed. It's entirely in their minds, provided to them by the mainstream media and the schools. Again, we're back to that. Anyway, I started to talk about my employment in the chemical factory, and I wandered there for a moment. When I went to work in the chemical factory, I went in with gusto, and I wanted to learn as much of the process as possible so that I could be as good as I could possibly be at the job. At the time, I had a young and growing family, and it was important to me to make sure that stream of income was secure. And the best way I could secure that income was to become as valuable to the company as possible. So for that reason, when I went in, I started going through the training. I didn't just learn how to do the job. I wanted to learn how the chemical factory itself and how every aspect of it worked. That way, I could do the job to the highest level possible that I could accomplish. So it wasn't very long at all until I was in a position of training other people to do the job. And one of the problems I had, I remember, and this is why I bring this back to schools and education. This guy came in, and he was about my age. Again, I was early 20s. He was about my age. I think he was maybe 1 year younger than me or so, or he might have even been 1 year older than me. But I was supposed to train him, and he reminded me of almost everybody I knew in school, and I'll explain why I say that in a second, or at least you'll understand it in a second. I began training him to do the job, and so I would take him, and this is going to be a little bit mundane perhaps, but I would take him around and I would show him, okay, here's this valve, and this valve feeds this tank, and what we need to do is about twice a shift, this tank, you need to make sure this tank is at the right levels, and if the tank is not at the right levels, you need to adjust this valve. And so I would show him how to adjust the valve. And then I would show him the charts that are associated with that valve and that show where the position of the valve is and what the levels of the tanks are and so forth like this. And then I would take him to another thing where we had this huge pile of limestone gravel. And what we did with the limestone, we crushed the limestone and then we cooked the limestone in a long rotary kiln. And this released much of the CO2 out of the limestone, and then we used the CO2 gas in the process of the chemical plant, and this produced a byproduct which was essentially quicklime, which is a pretty nasty substance. And then we packaged that up and used it in other aspects of the chemical factory and sold it for other purposes and so forth. Anyway, so I take him over and I start showing him all how the crushed rock works and how the hoppers work and the belts that feed them and the tunnels underneath the piles and all these things. And he was very careful to learn all the procedures that I was telling him. But he never learned the process itself. So he could obey his instructions, but he never understood the purpose of what it was he was doing. So he would adjust the valve like I showed him and still overrun the tank or run it empty, because he didn't actually understand that in his efforts to obey by adjusting the valve, he wasn't understanding why he was adjusting the valve. And so he would try to fill the gravel hoppers with limestone by, you know, pushing the right buttons and running the right belts and all this. And yet he would end up overfilling things and burying tunnels full of gravel that we would have to hand shovel out to get them free again, because he never understood the process. He understood the obedience, and he was more than willing to do anything I would tell him to do, you know, as far as the job was concerned. He would dig with a shovel, he would go and check the charts, he would push the right buttons, he would do all the things that he was supposed to do, and he never, ever, ever understood the process of what it was he was doing. Now, one thing that caused me to think about that particular guy. And let me just say, and that's what I realized about school, is that that's exactly what school had taught him to do. School teaches you to memorize dates and memorize names, but you don't know why. You don't know what's important about those people. You don't really care. All you need to know is that in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. And so, okay, we have his name, we have a date. We know something about him discovering America, but we don't really know any of the stuff about him. Oh, well, he proved the world was round. No, wrong. That was already well known. The size of the world wasn't exactly known, but some pretty close mathematical calculations had been done. All that stuff about flat Earth and round Earth, that's all lies of school and the mainstream media. Most scholars of the day knew that the world was round. That's entirely lies on the part of the media and schools. That's not what Columbus was doing. He wasn't trying to prove the world was round. But that's what school does to you. It causes you to think, to memorize things and to obey without actually understanding processes and without knowing why you're doing it. We memorize, to get through school, you memorize all these math formulas that mean nothing, and you'll probably never use them again. What good are they? We learn how to take tests in school. They teach you very, very carefully how to take tests. And yet nothing in real life is like that. They don't teach you how to use logic and reason. This is the hallmark of public schools. They don't teach logic and reason. They don't teach you how to dissect something morally and figure out what is this based on? Why am I doing this? Is this moral? None of that is covered. You're actually taught not to think that way. And what I started to say a second ago, the thing that reminded me about that guy that I'm talking about at the chemical company, I have this wonderful little dog named Nikki, and I talk about her pretty regularly on the podcast. Nikki is this cute little dog. She has big ears, and she's kind of a mixed little dog, but she's a little bit bigger than a Chihuahua, she doesn't really look like a Chihuahua, but anyway, so she's had a rough life. She wasn't necessarily, she was never beaten or neglected in that way or abused like some dogs, but the best we can figure out, she and a sibling were very close together for a long time, and then they were separated, and she was dumped into the pound where she was about to be put down, and then she was rescued. But then the people that had her, that rescued her, really couldn't take care of her the way that she needed to be taken care of, and she was stuck in a house full of cats, and she had it was all hardwood floors, and she couldn't get up and down the stairs because she couldn't get traction on the hardwood stairs that are very steep in a very, very old house. And the cats were really mean to her. And she's had a rough life, and she learned some bad habits. And so now we've had her not quite a year, and just trying to express love to her and make her a part of the family and everything. But she has picked up these things that she's learned from trying to adapt to the different homes that she lived in and trying to please all these different people that have been her owners at times, as we're trying to bring her into a family, but she has spent her whole life being owned rather than being part of a family. So one of the things is that she has a real hard time. She's very shy, and she doesn't want to really impose herself on people to let you know when she needs to go to the bathroom. So she will just get up and quietly walk over to the door. And if you don't see her, then she gets desperate after a little while, and then she, has a mistake. Well, someone at some point in time has tried to teach her to jump up and stand on the door and scratch it with her claws to get your attention. But she never connected the jumping up on the door as a sign of, as a method of getting your attention. So what happens is she'll go and quietly sit next to the door and wait to be noticed. And if you notice her and you go over to the door to let her out, then she'll stand up on the door and tap it with her claws. So she's trying her best to be obedient, but she never connected the purpose of standing up on the door, tapping it with her claws. She never connected that purpose with getting attention. So she very quietly will go over and sit there and wait. And if you don't notice her, she can only wait so long. And then she has an accident. And So I saw that and I thought, man, that's just like that guy all those years ago, 30 years ago in the chemical plant. He was very enthusiastic to do as good a job as he could possibly do. And he was willing to do, you know, anything in the job that we told him to do. He was more than willing to do that. He'd get dirty. He'd work himself, you know, into a sweat. He was more than willing to do all those things, but he never understood the purpose of what it was he was doing. And I think so many of us in the liberty movement, it's so easy to get wrapped up in all the, you know, whether we're, I'll go back to beating up Ron Paul again. We get wrapped up in doing the stuff that we see and in supporting the candidate or whatever. In doing all the things by putting up pictures on Facebook and by going out to rallies and you know, trying to talk to people and sharing with your family, and people get all wrapped up in doing all these things that have to be done to support the liberty movement, and they lose sight of the real purpose. What is it you really want to accomplish? Do you just want your, you know, to use Stefan Molyneux's example, do you really just want your master to only beat you three times a week instead of six? Or using, I can't remember. Nope, let's skip that one. I blew the reference. So let's just stick with Stefan Molyneux. So you realize you're a slave. You know you're a slave. Pause there a moment while the house got buzzed by an airplane. So you know you're a slave. You don't like to be beaten. And so what you do is you work towards only being beaten once or twice a week, or maybe even beaten, you know, on a rare occasion, and rather than working towards not being a slave, rather than realizing that the slavery has to end. The slavery is immoral. The beating is beside the point. The beating only happens because of the slavery, and the slavery is immoral. And rather than realizing that and embracing that, and shooting towards the goal of eliminating the slavery, we get wrapped up in tiny little details about, are we going to do this with the Federal Reserve? Are we going to get this guy elected? Are we going to be, you know, are we going to pass this law? Are they going to come for our guns? Are they going to, you know, are they going to try to pass another law about whether they can stop and search us on the highways? And we get all wrapped up in individual aspects of what the state is doing. And when you do that, then the state has you. They own you in your mind. They own you. And all they have to do is occasionally give you a pacifier, and you'll be okay because you feel like you're winning. See, oh, well, right now they're stopping people on the highways, and the Cobra teams are going out there, and they're searching cars for no reason, and they're doing all these things. And then you get a little bit of a reprieve. And then you feel like you've won, but you haven't won. You're just getting beat less this week. They still own you. You're still a slave. You have to get beyond that. You have to realize what your real goal is. You have to know what your goal is. You have to understand what your goal is. And if your goal is just to be beaten less, then you're really not helping anybody. You're not helping yourself. You're not helping the other slaves. You're certainly not helping your children, because you're bringing your children into a world of more slavery. So really, I don't see how we can shoot for anything other than the real target. And the real target is to achieve the morality that exists when there's no slavery, to eliminate the slavery. And, you know, a lot of people have compared the liberty movement to the fight against slavery in the 1800s. And there were people in the 1800s who made the argument that what we need to do is just legislate this like this and adjust this like that. And others, you know, and others would argue, no, what we need to do is, you know, is make it the law so that when a new state comes into the Union, it's not going to be a slave state. And they argued about these things back and forth without addressing the real problem, which was the morality of people owning people. And so rather than address that, and rather than realize that the government in Washington, D.C., that claimed to be fighting against slavery, was actually creating an atmosphere where slavery was guaranteed. And so even when the time came that the government in Washington, D.C. switched around and decided that it was time to abandon that type of slavery. All they were really doing was turning everybody, into a slightly different version of a slave. That's all they were doing. Once they switched the government in Washington, D.C. to say, now no one can leave this government. Before, you could actually separate yourself from the government. Now, after, you know, once Lincoln had his way, you can no longer separate yourself. That means you're a slave. If you're bound into an organization, or if a body of people hold ownership over you, and you don't have the capability to separate yourself from them, that is slavery. That's what it is, and that's what happened. And so we have to recognize what the real goal is. The real goal is not to have, to be able to go down and purchase a handgun without registering something. Or that's not the goal. The goal is to not have to ask permission for things that you do. To be able to function in life without having a master approve or disapprove of your action. And that's not going to happen as long as the master exists. As long as you believe in your mind that we have to have a master, that the state, that the government on any level can do these things for you, even dismembering government. If you believe that we have to have government to dismember government, then you're trusting in government. You still believe in the state. You're missing the goal. You're not seeing the target. You're not grasping the purpose. You're just obeying. You're just doing what you're told. You've fallen victim to exactly what the mainstream media and the schools teach. And I know, you know, like I said a second ago, so many people in the liberty movement get offended if you point out that, what you're doing is exactly what they want you to do. It's exactly what the mainstream media and exactly what the government, exactly what all those aspects of the state, the corporate world, the banking world, the mainstream media, the government, all those tentacles of the state, when you expect that you can work within the government and accomplish things, when you believe this, when you believe that the government can fix the banking problem, when you believe that, you know, that corporations are gonna bring us more prosperity, when you believe these things, keeping in mind that corporations are simply an aspect of government, when you believe these things, that because they depend on the government, so when you believe these things, you're trusting in that master, rather than seeing the real target and the real goal. And that is true liberty, real freedom. Not asking your owner's permission. Not saying, not hiding under, under a Second Amendment to say, I'll be safe as long as I have my Second Amendment and my guns, and I can defend my house and I'll be free and all these things. No, you're just believing what you've been told. You're not really seeing the fact that if you resist government, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how many guns you have. It doesn't matter how well you fortify your house. It doesn't matter how far out in the woods you hide your house. If government's attention is drawn towards you and they decide to, they will take you out because they own you. As long as state-based government exists, no one can really be free. Folks, for more on liberty, property rights, and the zero aggression principle, go to badquaker.com, and thank you very much for listening. Goodbye, folks.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. We're working very hard to spend your tax money to keep you from hearing things like freedomfiends.com. That's why we're very upset about freedomfiends.cz. Freedomfiends.cz is a liberty media archive of Freedom Fiends material hosted in the Czech Republic. Freedomfiends.cz is outside the jurisdiction of the Watchers, who employ me, the Central Scrutinizer, to keep you from hearing things that might make you think. My fellow scrutinizers and I do not want you to visit freedomfiends.cz. Do not visit freedomfiends.cz.